Merrill was accepted into the local college that seldom rejected anyone. He succeeded in winging it through 2 years, during which he concentrated mainly on his social skills, but then elected to take some time off to earn some cash. In the summers, he had worked in construction, which he enjoyed immensely. At age 20, he became a finishing work carpenter's apprentice. He did not return to college. Instead, he did carpentry over the next 4 years, always employed by his mentor. After only 18 months on the job, he was no longer an apprentice. He earned pretty good wages and did commendable work. But then he got restless. So he made up his mind to make money, and lots of it. Moreover, he was tired of working for someone else. As a kid, he had always been a leader, and he wanted to have people working for him. So Merrill quit his job and made up his mind to become a contractor. People were amazed that he could agree on features of a house and never have to write anything down. He took on quite a few projects, probably many more than he should have. Suddenly, it hit him. He was in over his head. Problems with attention to details, quantitative thinking, and time management had always been like massive tumors to him. Now they were metastasizing. His carelessness and inability to meet deadlines made his customers irate. There were several lawsuits. Pretty soon, most of the good subcontractors refused to work for him. At the age of 27, Merrill declared bankruptcy. This story is from the book Ready or Not, Here Life Comes by Dr. Mel Levine. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about helping to prepare our kids to be competent, content adults? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today is probably a familiar name to many of our listeners, an expert when it comes to learning differences and growing up. Dr. Mel Levine is a professor of pediatrics at the University of North Carolina Medical School in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and director of the university's Clinical Center for the Study of Development and Learning. Dr. Levine is also the co-founder and co-chair of All Kinds of Minds, a nonprofit institute for the study of differences in learning. He's the author of many books, including the bestseller A Mind at a Time, The Myth of Laziness, and his latest, Ready or Not, Here Life Comes. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Levine.
Thanks very much. I'm delighted to be here.
In your book, Ready or Not, Here Life Comes, you conclude that we often neglect to give our kids the appropriate preparation for becoming grown-ups. What's the most important thing parents should remember about preparing our children for their own adulthood?
Well, I think in so many respects, the story we started with, Merrill's saga, really presents us with some challenges for parenting. And in particular, I would say one of the things that parents have to be focusing on is how to make your kid into a worker. That means having a work ethic, work habits, organizational skills, the ability to focus on important details. And it doesn't just mean being cool like Merrill and believing that the sort of coolness you had as a teenager and that surface charm is going to carry the day for you as you get older. And in my book, I pointed out that we're seeing an awful lot of young adults who have a condition called work-life unreadiness. They're just not ready to go to work, and they've not really developed a lot of the skills that you need to be a true worker.
What are kids lacking today, then?
I think there are a number of things. First of all, our kids are being brought up in an era that really promotes instant gratification. There's a new F word in our society, one I can say on the radio, spelled F-U-N, fun. Mm-hmm. And kids are just obsessed with fun, and they say things like, I like my second grade teacher, she's fun. And there's this notion that everything you do in life is judged by the extent to which it's fun. Well, that doesn't always sit well with developing a working capacity. We have something we call mental effort, which is your ability to do things you don't feel like doing.
It's interesting, isn't it, how our society has sort of evolved, because we think, you know, there's the generation, our generation, I must say, who were brought up by parents who came out of the Depression.
Right.
And there was no fun. I mean, you were supposed to pull your weight, you were supposed to do stuff, and then our parents, I think, wanted us to have an easier time of it. And so the further away, I think, we get generationally from the necessity for really slugging it out.
Right. The more... in a sense, at risk, these kids become. And they may not learn good coping skills. They may, because they've had so much instant gratification, be a little like Merrill and feel they can start at the top instead of working their way up. So they kind of rush through the early stages in a career and really don't develop the foundation they need. to be productive as they go through life. And I think that instant gratification, that craving for fun, is a part of that. I interviewed a guy when I wrote my book who all his life wanted to be a dentist. And he just was really interested in dentistry. And then when he was almost finished with college, he wrote away for dental school catalogs. And he told me he looked through the catalogs and decided not to become a dentist. I said, why not? He said, I don't know. Dental school just didn't look like fun.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, goodness.
Thought it would be fun all those years.
Imagine how being trained to look in someone's mouth becomes a form of entertainment. but that's what he was seeking, apparently.
Isn't that interesting? That's the kind of thing. Wouldn't you feel like you would want to tell that guy? Why don't you talk to several dentists and see if they had fun in dental school?
Exactly. It's been said that there are three stages that you have to go through to really be productive and fulfilled. One is called the phase of initial romantic attraction. Wouldn't it be cool to play the saxophone? Stage two is 7 years practicing the saxophone. And stage three is I'm having a ball playing the saxophone in a jazz group.
But it took a long time to get there.
How do you get through stage two?
Yeah.
And we're seeing more and more kids who want to skip the discipline, skip the work part of it. And in part, it's because parent roles have changed. And we're seeing, first of all, parents who are really frightened of their children, particularly their teenage children, who have so many weapons they can use against their parents. You know, I can drop out of school, I can get depressed, I can get on drugs, I can get pregnant. And there are just all these hazards that you see when you see your kids, and parents sometimes feel quite powerless. As a result of which, a lot of parents are afraid to be taskmasters, and instead, they become recreation coordinators and entertainment providers with their
chauffeurs.
Minivan. Yes. So I think that's a big issue at the moment, is how do parents regain control, and it's really in the best interests of their kids. The other thing we want to really be careful of is to make sure that childhood doesn't become an impossible act to follow.
That's interesting.
That's a good line.
It was the best time. I had the best time. It was really great. The high school reunions attract the people who peaked in high school.
Exactly. Yeah. And one of the subgroups that I found of people who weren't ready for adulthood were people in their 20s who still were adolescents, still trying to be cool, still having all these adolescent relationships and values that they couldn't shed, partly because adolescence was just such a absolutely magnificent period in their lives with so much fun.
They were probably being outgrown, though, by their peers.
Yeah.
So they're going to be left behind.
Exactly. And by the way, when we talk about something like work-life unreadiness, we're not talking about every single kid in his 20s. We're talking about a subgroup, more like an epidemic than an attempt to characterize all generation of people. I think there are a lot of individuals who do just fine, but we're seeing a growing group that isn't doing very well getting started.
Do you think that instead of parents feeling, oh, I just want my kid to be happy,
right. They
should be working not only on making their kids worker bees, but also somehow trying to inoculate them to be able to handle failure? Because that's the thing we all get. Success
Absolutely. Sometimes
we get, but failure we all get.
Absolutely. You know, I talked to the head of psychiatry at one of the most well-known universities in the United States. And I asked him, who are your freshmen and sophomores that end up getting depressed or that have to get medication because they're having so many mental problems? And he said something very interesting to me. He said, you know, Mel, they're not the ones you think they are. They're not the ones who grew up the hard way, who came from broken families and had a lot of trouble as they were growing up. The kids who fall apart are the superstars, the ones who were top athletes, who thought their bodies were wonderful, and who were just idolized by their parents and relatives and peers and teachers. And they never, and here's the big point, they never ever learned how to deal with feelings of inadequacy. Sooner or later, we all have to deal with that. We all have to cope with that. So parents ought to be careful not to be making childhood too smooth a pathway, because in a sense you're depriving a kid of education. If your daughter has a run-in with a teacher, don't go call the principal. Don't go race in and ball out that teacher. It's a terrific educational experience. You can serve as a consultant to your child, but she's got to implement a strategy to deal with that. If your child gets some bad grades on her report card, that's excellent. As long as there aren't too many. Because the way to win the war is to lose a few battles along the way.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on helping our children become adults.
Washington, D.C. with Kids. an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Mel Levine about how to help today's young people grow into responsible adulthood.
In earlier eras, it was easier for kids to have stronger ties to adults so they could see firsthand a number of role models of adulthood. What can parents do today to foster those same kinds of connections?
Well, Linda, I think you put your finger on a very serious issue, which is our children are underexposed to adults at the moment. Most of their role models are each other, or maybe a few basketball players and rock stars. But realistic role models are in short supply. And I think children need to be studying adulthood. They need to be students of us, in a sense, and trying to psych us out. And we're just not seeing much of that. I think when you have company and have your own friends over, keep the kids there. Don't let them run off. They need to be studying your friends. I think you need to be talking about issues that you're having with your career and seeking their advice and helping them see the complexity of it. We're living in an era now where kids don't have their grandparents sitting around telling tales of what it was like when they were growing up. So there's a kind of biographical deprivation. Kids are not really seeing that. And in fact, most kids have no interest whatsoever in adults. Somebody sent me a study recently that had been published a few years ago in the psychology literature that demonstrated that if you look at adults who are extremely successful and have done very, very well in their careers, one of the most common findings is they were individuals who during childhood had spent a tremendous amount of time with adults. And we have this drive right now to make sure that our kids are socializing with other kids all of the time. I think kids are being overdosed with kids, and they need to be spending more time with adults, studying adults, thinking about the future.
Which means that has to be a priority for adults to include them, which is a whole lot rockier than just
That's
having
correct.
An adult gathering or
right.
something where the kids are out of the way, they're not making trouble.
Right. You know, I interviewed a bunch of business people in New York about their young employees in their early 20s. And tried to sense what were their biggest concerns about their young employees. And by the way, they really bent my ear. They had a lot of concerns.
Oh my.
But one of the things that kept coming out over and over again is that their young employees have a total inability to think long term.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. And you think long term by studying adults, by thinking about your future.
That's interesting. So it's the advertisements, the whole kind of media blitz that kids are exposed to
right.
that say, you know, get it now, do it now.
Right.
This is
everything
now.
Has to
My
be in the present.
Runs a business, and when he interviews young people, anybody for jobs, one of the things he asks them is, where would you like to be in 5 years?
Yeah.
Where would you like to be in 10? How do you see your life five years from now? And they look at him blankly.
Totally stymied by the question.
Absolutely never gave it a thought.
They would much rather. He had asked, what are you going to be doing Saturday night?
Yes. And that they might not even know if it's Tuesday.
Yes, that's it. You mentioned that successful adults need to be able to navigate a number of different social and professional groups and build durable relationships in each, speaking about socialization. Why is this a different kind of skill from the social skills that kids develop in grade school and high school?
Well, I think, first of all, in grade school and high school, more than anything else, children want to be accepted. They want to be part of a clique or group. It's just such an incredible fundamental drive that they have. And therefore, you try to relate to people who are very much like you, and you become very influenced on them to become even more like them than you were before you met them. And so there's this kind of assimilation and homogeneity. If you don't mind, I'll say often mediocrity that pervades those relationships. And then when you're an adult, first of all, you have to stop putting on a show and trying to act cool all the time, which is hard. You have to relate to a lot of different kinds of people, not just people who are Xeroxed copies of you, people with very different values and backgrounds and age groups. And one of the things you have to be able to do, and I heard this from a lot of business people as well, is understand that person's needs. For example, if you're selling cars and a customer comes in, you've got to evaluate that customer. You know, can I sell him a more expensive car? What does he need?
Does he need a truck?
Or does he need a truck? Or is he mainly preoccupied in price? So if I don't really lower the price, I'm going to lose him. And that's a kind of banal, mundane example. But in everything you do, you have to be able to sort of think about people and take the perspective of people who are different from you, who aren't part of your college fraternity, so to speak, or your clique in high school or your basketball team. And that ability also, I think, gets back to what we were saying about really having some experience studying adults. And so it's a very different kind of relationship in adult life. You have to be a good collaborator. You have to be a good competitor. You have to understand people who are more senior than you are.
Which means you have to pay attention and listen.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law used to always say, you have two eyes, you have two ears, you only have one mouth.
Right.
That should tell you something.
Exactly. Do you know that something like 60 or 70% of young workers very much dislike and have difficulty relating to their supervisors?
Mm-hmm.
How do you prepare kids for that?
You think of experiences that kids have sort of on the cusp of adulthood.
Right.
Jobs, college,
right. Right.
People enter the service.
Sure.
How can those kinds of experiences be helpful in the way we're talking about?
I think that it's really vital that kids have work experiences. Sometimes we mediocritize kids by having them have soccer Monday, clarinet Tuesday, dance lessons Wednesday, religious class Thursday, and every day of the week they're programmed. And that's very different from work, because it's basically you're judged by how well you can comply with what a coach wants you to do or a clarinet teacher advises. And I think work is very different in the sense that work is a place where you figure out your own strengths and weaknesses, where you come to understand what your competitive advantage is, which is something that's a very significant part of human development, I think, and where you can begin to understand the intricacies and dynamics of a career. Particularly, for example, how do you show initiative? I cited in my book an example that I'll never forget. Well, I go to work very early in the morning, and one morning I was on my way to work, and I decided to stop and get the newspaper at the supermarket, which was open 24 hours. It was about 5:45, and there were two teenagers sitting on a wall outside the supermarket. And in North Carolina, where I come from, everybody talks to everybody all the time. So I stopped and said hello to them. And then I said, what are you guys doing here on the wall? And they said, oh, our shift doesn't start till 6:00 in the supermarket. And I said, let me ask you something. And the guy said, yes. I said, would you ever consider going in now and stocking shelves 15 minutes early? And your supervisor would see that and be really impressed. And who knows, you might emerge as an assistant manager before you know it.
They must have looked at you like you suggested they fly.
They were ready to call the ambulance and have me sent to the local mental health hospital. That was so outrageous.
That's
too
foreign
to them.
It's
called
work
initiative.
Ahead.
Yes, and getting ahead. And they just didn't have that sense of the hidden agendas in work.
Why is it so important for adults in training to have specific responsibilities that are theirs?
Because I think that's a way that you learn to delay gratification. It's a way that you learn to be productive, and you learn about the gratification that comes from productivity, which is very different from the gratification that comes from fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more meaningful, it's deeper, it's more stable. But unless you've tasted it, then you're sort of going to become a hedonist. You're just going to seek pleasure all the time.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on helping our children become adults.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Mel Levine about how to help today's young people grow into responsible adulthood.
I was on the Rhodes Scholarship Selection Committee for many years, and I was so impressed with a lot of the college students who were applying for Rhodes Scholarships and got them. And one of the things that was most impressive to me was what they did over the summers. The summer is like a blank canvas. It's all yours. And the question is, are you going to do something totally self-indulgent? Or are you going to do something meaningful? So one candidate was very interested in nature and animals, and he went and spoke to a candidate for the state legislature who was going to be running for office in November, and he asked if he could work with him on putting together his platform on the environment. And he worked like the devil, going around doing that sort of thing. And he really did grunge work, pulling together all the detail. But it was work. It wasn't any fun. And let me give you another example that I think really has had a major influence on me. I made a TV series with National Public Television a while back and got very friendly with the cameraman, a guy named Bill. And Bill had a lot of trouble all the way through school. He wasn't a good student and dropped out of school in high school in Leominster, Massachusetts, and worked in a shoe store and hated it. But he needed the money. But he always wanted to be a TV cameraman. So he took a course and became certified as a TV cameraman. But unfortunately, there were no jobs available for cameramen in the Boston area. He really wanted to work for public television, and they definitely had no jobs. And then one day in the shoe store, one of his buddies came up to him and showed him an ad from the Boston Globe that WGBH, the public television station, was looking for someone to work in the mailroom. Bill took the job in the mailroom. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He was awesome. He reorganized the mailroom. He worked extra hours. He went and got coffee for everybody. 6 months later, an opening came up for a cameraman at WGBH. Everybody loved Bill. He got the job. He now makes $450,000 a year doing documentaries for public television. He has a whole bunch of people who work with him, and he attributes all of his success to his willingness to be superb in the mailroom. We've got to teach kids that. We've got to teach kids that life is a ladder. You don't start at the top. Mm-hmm. And that has to be driven home to them. And there's a mailroom out there for every kid.
This is how to succeed in business, isn't that right?
Yes. Excellent.
All the parents listening are going to get their kids jobs in mailrooms. Just watch.
A lot of kids are growing up in an environment now that's anti-intellectual, where the emphasis is on what I call visual motor ecstasy.
In other words, being a basketball star.
Playing video games.
Oh my.
Using skateboards, being fascinated with fast-moving objects of one sort or another. Sort of mostly mindless activity that have no language and communication in them, that have no real brainstorming or creativity built into them. We have to make sure that we're really thinking hard about how minds are developing. And one way to do that is figuring out what a kid's affinities are. And an affinity is an area of interest toward which a kid is drawn for some unknown reason. A particular child loves cars. Somebody else loves aviation. Someone else is real interested in the military. Somebody else loves fashion design. And I believe that an affinity is a brain crying out to tell you what it's wired for. And the question is anybody listening? Well, once you pick up an affinity, that's where you can build a kid's mind. So if your child loves cars, subscribe to every car magazine you can find. Help him become an expert on cars to build his mind around that area that's so romantic to him. You know, it's been shown that the best way to learn how to read well is to read about something you know a lot about. Every kid should have expertise in an area. The best way to really develop your mind is to go into depth over time.
This term we hear all the time, well-rounded. A kid should be well-rounded. What do you think of that?
One of the most important pieces of advice I can give to parents is to know your child's strengths and weaknesses and affinities. Monitor how those are going. Realize that there's absolutely no reason to be good at everything. And in fact, some people who are too well-rounded can't figure out who they are or what to do with their lives.
Seems like when you talk about any person who has made a big splash in any way, from Mother Teresa to Sir Edmund Hillary,
right.
Nobody was well-rounded. Everybody was quite focused.
Exactly. Every parent who's ever brought me a child who's struggling in school had a question that no one ever asked me. Never asked it, but it was obviously the major question. How's he going to turn out? What's she going to be like when she's 23? And part of it is being able to pinpoint his or her profile of strengths and weaknesses. And we have a nonprofit institute called All Kinds of Minds where we're trying to educate parents and teachers and clinicians and kids themselves to understand their profiles of strengths and weaknesses and their affinities and begin to think long term.
Well, you have given us an awful lot to look for, an awful lot to think about. And so, Dr. Mel Levine, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for probing questions.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Mel Levine's new book, Ready or Not, Here Life Comes. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. 8573. 7373 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 293 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you're tuning in. Our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Find the topic, the guests, and click on the words Listen to Podcast. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.